Hello, I'm Lucy Harper, and welcome to Micropod, your small but perfectly formed podcast about microbiology. This edition celebrates the communication of microbiology through unusual, imaginative, and innovative approaches, something both our guests have in common, as well as being winners of the 2012 SFAM Communication Awards. From an incredibly strong shortlist, artist Anna Dimitriou won the Professional Communicator Award, and Vicky Young took home the Scientist Communicator Award. Between them, they use art, music, and more than a touch of good humour.
It's a 2 metre uterus that's really cute. It's yellow and made of paper mache and acrylic paint, and it has a little bit of glitter on it.
More on that sparkling uterus a little later on. The SFAM Communication Awards were announced at this year's summer conference dinner in Edinburgh. The city is famous for its science and its annual theatre festival, so it was a very appropriate location. Several of the nominees were present, as was science writer and broadcaster Sue Nelson, who was one of the judges for the awards.
I thought it was a tremendous shortlist, and I couldn't quite believe the quality and the range as well of styles of communication from the shortlists for each category. Interestingly, 8 out of the 10 shortlisted people were women, and I don't know whether that means women are more likely to want to communicate science, because when you think of most of the science communicators in the media, the well-known ones are predominantly men. So I found that quite encouraging. I think what made Vicky Young win the scientist vote was, even though she's at the start of her career, it was the range of what she did, from an egg and sperm race at a music festival to sort of non-fiction science. And it was the innovation for me in terms of what she did and the range of audiences that she was actually getting. And when it came to the professional communicator votes, I was delighted actually that Anna Dimitriou won, an artist, over Ed Young too, who I have an enormous amount of respect for, an extremely talented communicator, as were the others who were shortlisted in that category. But Anna's work with her art, I had literally never seen anything like it before. Painting, textiles, sculptures, quilts, and, you know, she'd put this work everywhere as well, blogs, tweets, and it just blew me away. So what worthy winners. I can't really say anything more about them. They're both fantastic.
They are indeed. And the first winner we're going to hear from is Anna Dimitriou, a Brighton-based artist. Anna is currently artist in residence at Oxford University, and she's part of the UK Clinical Research Consortium's Modernising Medical Microbiology project. As a result, she often works with live bacteria.
I work with things like Chromobacterium violaceum and a genetically modified strain of it called CV026 that can reveal bacterial communication in process. I've made a quilt using MRSA bacteria where the textile that I used was embedded in chromogenic agar plates, and the patterns, which were inoculated with MRSA, and the patterns on the quilt are made using things like natural and clinical antibiotics like vancomycin susceptibility discs, foxitin strips and things like that.
Not the sort of quilt you want to sleep under though.
Well, it's absolutely fine now because it's been autoclaved, so it's completely safe. It's probably cleaner than most people's quilts now.
How does making a quilt containing bacteria communicate science to a new audience?
Well, quilts are traditionally storytelling vehicles, and part of the idea of it was to tell the story of MRSA research through the squares on the quilt. So each of the quilt squares is a kind of different example of some of the tools and techniques in the treatment and diagnosis of MRSA. And I made another piece more recently that's some of the squares are MRSA and some are MSSA, and I got members of the public to stitch on natural and clinical antibiotics and various things to the pieces. Then we took them away to we did this at Oxford Science Festival, and they even got to embed the squares in chromogenic agar. Then we took the squares back to the lab, inoculated them with either MRSA in it or MSSA, and then we put the pictures of them online, so on the UK Clinical Research Consortium Modernising Medical Microbiology Project website. But also, when people's hands are occupied and they're kind of making these things, they're much more likely to enter into interesting chats. And I worked with one of the researchers from the project as well, and we were doing the piece together. So we were having very interesting conversations. In fact, the first chap that sat down was an elderly gentleman who actually said, "Oh, yes, I had that. I was really ill with it." So we got him to kind of make that square as kind of a remembrance of that and getting through it. And so, you know, you get these very nice stories. And by doing this and having things like the quilt, it allows people to ask questions in a kind of less, I suppose, frightened way. They're quite open to kind of chatting and asking, rather than, you know, if they were like an ordinary member of the public suddenly at a science conference or something, wouldn't be very prepared to ask a question, but they don't mind asking me. I've worked with microbiology for quite a long time now, so quite a lot of the questions I can answer myself. And if I can't, we have a kind of phone a friend thing in place. So if it was something particularly difficult, I can contact one of the other people in the team and they'll answer the question for them.
You say you put the pictures online. Have you had any feedback from people post the event? Kind of, do you have kind of a longer term dialogue with these people?
In some cases, yeah. Sometimes people continue to write to you, or they add you on Facebook or something like that. So I have lots of people I find along the way. And sometimes there are artists as well that come. There's quite a few artists that are interested in working this way. And in that case, it's a balance between the sort of health and safety issues that they need to be very aware of, you know, and opening up their mind to the possibilities as well. So we're very careful on health and safety and all those sorts of things.
Good, very good. Glad to hear it. Okay, so kind of taking a step backwards, I guess. You're an artist by training, so what made you want to explore microbiology in particular?
I was terrified of certain things when I was young. I mean, I think I watched the Andromeda strain when I was about 5, which was probably a mistake. Or not. It's led on to all sorts of things. And I used to have a recurring nightmare that a mould was chasing me. And we studied plague, actually. We studied plague at school when I was about 8. And I became very terrified of getting plague for quite some time. And there was a kids' TV programme on the BBC, which I've tried to look up and can't find very much about a village, a sort of mythical medieval village that appeared from time to time where they all had plague. And I was terrified of that. So I think part of my work is about kind of trying to deal with these sort of childhood traumas, I suppose. You know, different people have different kinds of childhood traumas. Mine were a bit strange. I wrote my master's dissertation on vampire mythology. And when you kind of look into that as well, that's based on plague mythology. And a lot of things about history of medicine, history of disease, are tied up in it. So this sort of fantasy story of the vampire occurs when there were plague outbreaks. Also, tuberculosis. They've found buried bodies in America from like the 18th century that were TB victims, but they were buried as if they were vampires. They had crosses on them and buried in a certain ritualistic ways. It's very strange, the sort of tie-ins.
You obviously combine science and art. Why do you think that's an important thing to do when communicating science?
In my case, I guess the way the science communication is all part of what I'm about. So it's not like just the specific goal, it's kind of a byproduct as well. Because what I want to do is, I guess, understand the world, which I do through making art and kind of engaging with people through art practice, participation and things like that. And also I want to communicate through that and take other people kind of on the journey to understand the things that fascinate me. So I guess it just happens like that, really. Not just science and art, really. History, all those sorts of things come into it. Literature, whatever. I don't think that we need to stop at disciplinary boundaries. I'm very much crossing disciplinary boundaries all the time.
I guess there's no such thing as a typical day for you.
No, not really.
What have you done today then?
Some days you could say I get up at the crack of noon, and or other days I get up at 3:30 in the morning, rush for a flight, run a workshop in another country. So recently I've become like increasingly interested in TB and history of TB, and I was doing all this kind of research, and I found out about the Isle of Wight, which is quite near Brighton where I live. And how Ventnor on the Isle of Wight was basically a town founded on TB. They used to have an invalid train that went there, and it was at one time they had like the majority of TB sufferers in the UK. If you could afford it, they would be in Ventnor. It had a kind of microclimate and things like that, and people wrote these kind of fascinating and strange books about the healing climate and things like that. Oh. I've just been buying some eBays. I can get lost in eBay really quickly. And I've just bought an article from, I think, the 1916 London News on eBay on the treatment of consumption, where it talks about dust being the worst thing for TB, or the TB lives in the dust. And it tells you how to boil milk in order to prevent TB, but I don't think it's the right method either. So it's quite interesting that I've got to check on this, but I think it's not real pasteurisation. It's sort of just boil it for a few minutes thing. I don't think that works.
Interesting stuff. So all this combining of science and art, obviously a very effective way of communicating science to audiences that perhaps wouldn't necessarily be as open to science as in a more traditional view. What would you do with the winnings?
Ah, well, last year I bought myself a nice microscope, like a proper decent microscope, but I didn't have enough money to buy the video attachment and the dark field phase contrast attachment, so I'm going to spend it on that. And then the idea is that I can put bacteria under the microscope and get the video feed out, and then use that in digital generative pieces, so we can kind of track the bacteria and use that in different ways, maybe map it onto buildings or something like that.
So watch this space. Anna Demetriou and her successful mixture of art, microbiology and science communication. The winner of the Professional Scientist category of SFAM's Communication Awards is at the start of her scientific career. Vicky Young is a PhD student at the Centre for Reproductive Health at Edinburgh University. She studies endometriosis, where cells that line the womb or uterus can travel down a fallopian tube and embed themselves as lesions inside the pelvis. This painful condition affects about 5% of women of reproductive age, and there are few treatments available. Vicky is researching the protein TGF-beta to see if it can be used as a target to treat endometriosis. And, as I discovered when I spoke to her via Skype, she's no stranger to public engagement projects about science.
Well, the longest running one that I had is the egg and sperm race, and that's one of the ones that we run as now as the Centre for Reproductive Health. So myself and my friend Gemma within the centre thought it'd be cool to start a public engagement activity that was a little bit different, that communicated with people who was more of our age group rather than going to science festivals and schools. And we found this festival in Wales called Greenman Music Festival, and they have a garden there called Einstein's Garden, which has lots of really cool art science collaborations going on. So we decided to try and take an activity down there, and what we came up with was the egg and sperm race. And what we thought would be cool would be if we could race sperm with the audience to show how hard it is for a sperm cell to reach an egg cell under normal circumstances, and all the battles that the sperm cells have to go through to reach the egg. And then also take into account some lifestyle factors like chlamydia infections and smoking, and show how this can affect either your chances of becoming pregnant or your chances of having a successful pregnancy, and sort of educate our age group with that.
Can you describe what it looked like?
It's a 2-meter uterus that's really cute. It's yellow and made of paper mache and acrylic paint, and it has a little bit of glitter on it.
A sparkly uterus.
So there's not just the uterus, there's fallopian tubes and ovaries and a cervix. And then to race the sperm through it, we set up train tracks, which we painted to match the uterus. And okay. We raced electric trains that go with batteries. So we had 4 tracks and we raced trains through it, and it's very windy, so you can't actually tell which track's going to win. And the sperm, well, the trains which are disguised as sperm, all got different speeds. So it's quite a good activity. You never know which one's going to win.
That sounds great. So you talked about wanting to communicate your science to people of your own age group. Did it work?
I mean, from what we can gather, it did work. To do something new and exciting, we wanted to go to this music festival in Wales, the Green Man Music Festival. And we wanted to do an activity that would engage with, you know, the typical audiences that aren't engaged with music festivals or public lectures, which is really between the ages of 16 and 30. And what's great about music festivals is nearly everyone at music festivals is ages 16 to 30. So we decided to build a giant uterus that we would raise sperm through. And with that, we wanted to communicate how hard it is for a sperm to reach an egg cell under normal circumstances, because there's so many obstacles for it to overcome, but also to take into account different lifestyle factors that can affect the sperm cell reaching the egg cell. And one of the biggest ones that we wanted to communicate was chlamydia infections. Most people know that chlamydia infections are pretty bad. It can lead to pelvic inflammatory disease, which can block your fallopian tubes. But not many people associate that with ectopic pregnancy. And a lot of the research that we do at the centre is on chlamydia infections and how that can increase your chances of having an ectopic pregnancy in the future. We wanted to communicate to people, you know, you want to have a healthy lifestyle in this sense, because it can affect your fertility in the future, which can be really heartbreaking.
Why do you think it's important for people to be doing public engagement work, especially in terms of science?
Well, I think that we have an obligation in a way to do that. So, you know, if you go back to reproductive biology, which is where I'm based right now, a lot of people don't know that when you smoke, you can increase your chance of ectopic pregnancy. And they're never going to know that unless we actively tell them. So we need to find a way to tell them this, because it's important information that, you know, women of a reproductive age should have. And the thing with ectopic pregnancies is there's not many symptoms, and it can be, you know, it's quite a significant thing to happen to a woman who's pregnant. It can, you know, ultimately lead to death. So I think as a scientist, having that research and that information, we have a responsibility to tell people this. But also on top of that, you know, you have the fact that a lot of our work is funded by the government and by taxpayers' monies. And, you know, we have to justify what we're doing with that. We can't just do anything we want with that now.
Including your public engagement work, can you describe what a typical day is like for you?
I would normally get up at 7 and I go to the lab at 8, and I normally have breakfast in the lab while I'm, you know, reading my emails, and I write out what I want to do that day, the experiments that I have going on. I have lunch with a big group of friends at work, which is always fun, and I'm back in the lab in the afternoon. If I'm doing any public engagement work, I normally do that after work at night. It's not very often I'll do that during my working day in the lab. But the good thing with public engagement is, unless you're actually running an event, the organisation of the event can really be done at any time. So I quite like that. I normally do it, you know, when I have the energy to do it, when I'm enthused to do it. And, you know, it only takes a couple of hours each week to keep on top of what I do. But it's all fun. It's all fun things that I enjoy doing. So I don't really mind doing that in my spare time.
And that egg and sperm race contributed to the reason why you were one of the winners of this year's SFAM Communications Award. So, how are you going to spend the winnings if you haven't already?
Well, I've actually put them into a savings account, because I'm going to turn 30 next year, which is kind of scary. But I think we're going to go on a road trip across the southern states of the USA.
And oh, fantastic.
I put it towards that because I thought that'd be a lot of fun.
Vicky Young, ending our Science Communication Micropod special. And I hope it's inspired you to either think about creative ways to engage people about your research, or to apply for an award next year. Either way, best of luck, and see you next time on Micropod.